Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Steve Dale back with you on WGN Radio. 10 minutes after 10 o'clock, I found this story about the cat. The cat who had an obsession with a sparkling, twinkling Christmas tree the entire holiday season. It was an endless job to keep the cat from climbing the tree and the family from climbing the walls. However, it was just then that the oversized barn cat decided it was time to wage war. Unfortunately, the tree stand wasn't up to the added weight of this pudgy cat. With one single leap, like a reindeer landing on a roof, the cat launched right onto the tree. It came crashing down to the ground, and that happened in the middle of the night. So the family comes running down. They find ornaments all over the place, the tree branches all over the place. The cat slunk away under the radar, of course. Bobby, the youngest child, looked up at his mother, and he said, "Dad was right, Mom. Santa thought your Christmas tree was ugly, too." And with that, I introduce the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, Dr. Raina Carlson. Dr. Carlson, hi.
Hi, how are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Yeah, that does happen every now and again where the cat or maybe the dog or the pet bird in the middle of the night decides the Christmas tree is more a play toy than anything else, which I know you warn people about before the holiday season. And even right now, if you have a real tree, I want to ask you about something. And I know there aren't as many. The prices went up of those real Christmas trees versus the artificial. But people want to keep those trees alive for as long as possible. And if you go online, you will see all these additives. You won't believe, try Googling, friends, you won't believe what's online. Chicken soup, of course, chicken soup helps everything, right? Birth control pills, Viagra. So I'm not sure those things really help trees to live longer, but I am certain probably not good for pets to drink.
Absolutely. And there's all kinds of things around the house at the holiday times that we need to worry about. Not only all those crazy things we might put in the tree, but poinsettias and other tinsel and ribbons and packages, all kinds of things that I think you and I both have probably spent years trying to make sure every holiday season our pets don't get into those.
Are you up for this idea? I want to travel with you to Washington, D.C. We can hang out at the White House. We can protest, picket, no tinsel. I think tinsel actually should be banned because, and you can tell me because this is what you do, the number of surgeries every year that happen that are totally avoidable if there was no tinsel, and these animals sometimes don't make it.
Exactly. And I'm happy to see when I see decorations, I think there's less and less tinsel around, but still ribbons, the kitties just love to kind of chew on those ribbons, chew up packages. Again, poinsettias are toxic to animals, so we're concerned about chewing on the poinsettia plants. So yes. Tinsel would be, I don't like it anymore anyway. I would be fine if we just got rid of tinsel.
No tinsel! If you have questions for our veterinary friend who happens to be the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, Dr. Raina Carlson, 312-981-7200. And I know already I've received text about this, and that is the mysterious whatever it is that's been going around, some sort of upper respiratory infection that's been landing dogs in the hospital for a longer period of time than we typically might see. More dogs have succumbed, for sure, in various parts of the country, including Chicago, than we might otherwise suspect. So the first question is really, and then after the break, we'll talk about what you think has been going on. But the good news that you have for us that I will let you announce, and that there is simply not as much of it.
Yes, and that is the real good news. We are seeing the reported cases seem to go down. We've had quite an outbreak. There's been a lot of cases reported. And so thankfully, we're seeing those numbers go down right now.
Talking to Dr. Rena Carlson, the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, who made this announcement. And when the president makes it, it must be true that there isn't as much of this dog upper respiratory thing going on right now. So that's the good news. But what was going on in the first place, Dr. Carlson?
Well, probably what was going on, and again, there's a lot we still don't necessarily know, but we really think at this point all the evidence points to if it was the normal bugs, they may have been behaving a little bit differently, but we've got the normal bugs that we've seen in dogs for many, many, many years. And we could be seeing a situation where with COVID, we were all home, dogs may have been vaccinated less, and now, a couple years later, we are all out and about. The travel is really crazy. People are taking their animals places. So we're just seeing them be exposed to the normal bugs that, again, we've seen for years. So we've definitely seen a pretty good outbreak. We're seeing it soften at this point, so we're really happy about that.
It's referred to as the canine infectious respiratory disease syndrome. And that's a variety of different bacterial and viral infections that can impact dogs. And we vaccinate for them if you vaccinate, as you point out. Could there be one different strain of one of these many infectious agents, and there are many, that can impact dogs that may not be completely covered by the vaccine, or maybe covered at all by the vaccine, that could have caused this? Because in so many ways, it, for some dogs anyway, impacts them so more profoundly than what we've seen in the past.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There's a whole list of potential agents that will cause upper respiratory disease, and that can be, again, in the bacterial column. It can be in the viral column. We also have another column called mycoplasma. It's just a little different than viruses and bacteria. So we do have an entire list. And honestly, the vaccines really only cover a certain number of those. There just simply aren't vaccines for some of them. So we clearly recommend making sure that you have your dog vaccinated for those that we can vaccinate for, because sometimes, again, we have multiple agents in there that are causing the disease, and that might be why they become much more severe. We could possibly be seeing a slight variation change in one of these bugs that is now causing, you know, just a different course than we're used to seeing. And then, of course, you know, it's tough because we do have tests for those to find out what really is causing the respiratory disease in any individual animal. But sometimes we'll see negatives. Sometimes we just don't pick it up. So it can be really difficult to pinpoint what bug is actually causing this dog's disease.
Our telephone number, 312-981-7200. My text kind of disappeared here on the screen, but I can ad-lib pretty well what one of these questions was. I just vaccinated my cat for rabies. My cat has come down with FIP, which is feline infectious peritonitis. It's a 10-year-old cat. I really think we vaccinate too often. And let me say this before you jump in with your answer. We don't know completely what causes feline infectious peritonitis, but we do know that potentially anxiety, stress can precipitate a lowering of the immune system, which can create the opportunity for this to happen. Vaccines potentially, or going into the vet to get a vaccine, can do that. Having said that, this does not happen to anywhere near most 10-year-old cats. What's more, FIP generally occurs in kittens in the first place. So having said all of that, can you comment?
Well, first of all, again, like you said, FIP is a very, very complex disease in which there are a lot of things we don't know and why it does what it does. So it's difficult to really comment on that specific case because it brings up way more questions for me than I have answers for.
Of course.
But what I do want to say is vaccines overall are incredibly safe. The vaccine companies over the years now have really refined how they make these vaccines, and it's very, very, very unlikely that a vaccine is actually going to cause a certain disease. There's a lot of factors, you know, would have that cat come down with FIP, you know, anyway, without the vaccine. Again, you just start looking at, there's so many questions I have about that case, and I feel terrible, and I'm terribly sorry that, you know, someone has had to go through that with their cat, because FIP is a very serious disease.
If you go to FIP Warriors on Facebook, you can get support, and there are drugs that, again, this makes it even more complicated, but they do seem to work, those drugs that are coming in through the black market, in all honesty, because it's not been approved here in the United States, which is a whole different topic, that do seem to work for these cats with FIP. Another question here, Dr. Carlson, about feeding tuna to dogs or cats and a concern about mercury poisoning. Good question, not one I get every day.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and again, I'll be pretty general. I really think it's important to avoid human foods for many, many, many reasons, you know, not just potential mercury in tuna, but we really need to make sure these animals have a good, well-balanced diet, and your veterinarian's one of the best people to help you decide what is the right diet. How much should they be eating? It should be based on age, breed, other disease processes going on. And the more people food we add, it just really kind of messes up that normal nutritional balance. So my general answer is to really just avoid people food in general.
By the way, the texter wrote back that the cat had stress from being boarded, and the vaccine triggered the FIP in June. She tried FIP Warriors, as I suggested, but it was just too late for this cat, and I'm so sorry. There is nothing worse, I don't think, than feline infectious peritonitis or FIP. But we do have, it's not, you know, it was at one point in time fatal, and I was honored myself to make the announcement that no, these textbooks can now be changed, and it's now considered, quote, treatable, no longer fatal. Here's another question. Thinking of getting a new puppy. A puppy is with a private breeder, is 8 months old. Do you think that puppy has to get accustomed to being around other dogs? What do you think, Dr. Carlson?
Well, the first thing I'm always going to say is when you get that new puppy, get to your veterinarian as soon as you can and talk about all the important things about a new puppy. And that's obviously acclimating to a new place, vaccines, nutrition, getting into some obedience training again, because behavior and new puppies, that is your opportune time to really set the stage for the lifetime of good behavior. And that human-animal bond. So definitely puppies do need an acclimation period, and your veterinarian is going to be a perfect resource for you to ask all those questions and get all that information about having a new puppy.
So Dr. Carlson, president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, we all have resolutions. What is your resolution for pet parents for 2024? And can I believe I'm even saying 2024? I remember when it was 1990. Never mind. What would be your resolution?
Well, first of all, I'm with you. 2024, holy cow, that's crazy. You know, I think it's very important for all of us to think about health and really, what can we do to make sure our pets stay as healthy as they possibly can? Obviously, we're talking about the respiratory disease. We're worried about that. But there's so many other diseases out there as well. And so having a good checkup for your cat or your dog, talk to your veterinarian about exercise, nutrition, vaccines. What are the right vaccines for your dog? What are the risk levels? How can I avoid some of the areas or things that might be higher risk for my individual dog or cat based on, again, breed and age and other diseases? and their environment. So a good checkup and a good conversation with your veterinarian and the veterinary team, looking at overall general health and what can we do. And exercise is another one I didn't add in there. But what can we do to stay really healthy as in the new year and have a great new year?